Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Friday, March 31st, 2023. On today's episode, we're going to discuss the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film editorial director Peter Soretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
Brad, it's been a day and a half since I talked to you.
It's true.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Okay, let's get into it. There's some interesting news this week. So Disney has fired Ike Perlmutter. This is the Marvel chairman and longtime foe of Kevin Feige. For those of you who don't know, this is a long story, but Isaac Perlmutter was... Ike. I mean, his real name's Isaac, but yeah.
Ike. No, we're not going to give him his full name treatment. We're going to call him Ike.
Okay. Well, he, him and Avi Arad... were the owners of Toy Biz, which was a company that made Marvel toys. And then Marvel went into bankruptcy in like, was this in the 90s? Must have been the 90s. Yeah, late 90s. And Perlmutter and Arad basically took over the company. They were actually able to take over Marvel in this like move. Like, it seems crazy to me that like a toy company that makes the Marvel toys somehow like maneuvered to take over the company, but they took over the company. And then, you know, Ike was one of the owners of Marvel when it sold to Disney for $4 billion. And notoriously, Ike's the way he runs the company is not the way that other people in the company, including Kevin Feige, has agreed with. He's been very frugal, very like micromanager. I think at one point there was like 20 cameras all around like Marvel headquarters. He would like watch the cameras and stuff. They've ripped them out and stuff like that. Anyways, so he's been a part of this company for a long time, but in recent years he's been kind of like pushed out in a way. Like when was it? I guess in 2015, Perlmutter stopped overseeing the development of Marvel Studios. Disney felt that Kevin Feige should report directly to Alan Horn at the time. And, you know, I think Ike was still in charge of TV at the time, but that was when it was Marvel Television with Jeff Loeb. And then now it's, you know, Marvel Studios is doing the TV stuff. I think, Brett, do you know, like, I think he was still just in charge of toys. I think his
sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, Disney's doing layoffs. What is it, like 4,000 to 7,000 layoffs? It's a lot of layoffs. They're doing it over three phases. And this one became as a shock to everybody because I think everybody just assumed that Ike had like a no kill clause in his contract or something. Like, you know, or a not a no kill clause, a clause where if you are let go from the company that like they would have to pay out like a big amount of money or something like that. Like it seems like for a long time, nobody has liked this guy, but he's been still part of the Marvel Studios in some way. And actually, yeah, it says here in, I'm reading from New York Times here that he's been laid off as part of the cost cutting measure. Disney confirmed the move, was told by phone on Wednesday that Marvel Entertainment, a small division centered on consumer products and run separately from Marvel Studios, was redundant and would be folded into the larger Disney business units, according to two Disney executives briefed on the matter, who spoke spoke on the condition of anonymous to discuss
anonymity.
I can't talk, which is great because I'm doing a podcast. So I don't know, Brad, what do you think of this? Like, does this mean anything? It seems like he's been kind of out of the creative for some time, but it's kind of like an end of an era.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just they finally had like a probably a good reason to be able to get rid of him, and maybe that's what they lacked before. And this, you know, making, you know, cost cutting measures across the entire company is as good a reason as any to get rid of people that you don't, you know, feel like you really need anymore. Ike was one of the people who like created so many problems over the years, especially when it came to like meddling in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He was one of the people who was part of what is known as the Marvel Creative Committee. And like, if you want to know one of like the more, you know, infamous crappy things that he and those people tried to do, they almost ruined the ending of Captain America Civil War because they didn't think that Captain America and Iron Man should fight, and that instead all the Avengers should come together and fight the five super soldiers that are in that facility that Baron Zemo discovers. So, you know, have a civil war, but then don't have a civil war.
Oh, God. Okay. Also on Wednesday, Disney laid off Rob Steffens, co-president of Marvel Entertainment, and John Turteston, who is the chief counsel for the division. So they're, it really seems to me that they're getting rid of like these people that are probably making, you know, high salaried individuals that are seem to be redundant.
Yeah.
In the company. But I don't know. I think Perlmutter is worth mentioning because it's really an end of an era. I remember going to early Marvel Studios junkets before they were bought by Disney, and you know, Ike was still like notoriously a penny pinching guy. And usually when you go to these junkets, they have like a full like spread of food that you can enjoy before your interview. And at the Marvel Studios ones back then, it was Subway sandwiches, which I think they didn't even pay for. I think it was like a cross promotion kind of thing that he got the Subway sandwiches for free. Anyways, hey,
who doesn't like a good Subway sandwich?
Hey, I'm not complaining, but just, it was just funny because like you go to like these like ritzy, you know, 5-star, you know, Beverly Hilton hotels, and there's like a spread of Subway sandwiches. It's just funny. Anyways, okay. Let's move on. Let's talk about Star Wars, Brad.
Yeah,
we like talking about Star Wars. The new Star Wars series, The Skeleton Crew, this is coming from John Watts, the guy that did the Spider-Man movies from Marvel. It all ties back into Marvel. And they have lined up a set of directors for the series, which is becoming one of the most impressive set of directors I've seen in some time. Mm-hmm. So last week, I think we learned... Who did we learn? We learned that the Oscar winners behind Everything Everywhere All at Once, the Daniels, are going to be directing an episode. And this week we learned that the director of what many people consider to be the best live action Disney remake, David Lowery, who did Pete's Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
So he also did, you know, The Green Knight. He's a great filmmaker. You know, I was beginning to think, Brad, that great filmmakers might be scared to do Star Wars movies. But these two directors don't seem like they're, these two sets of filmmakers don't seem like they're people that need to do it for the money or need to do it to elevate their profile. Like they're already like some of the most, you know, they're sought after. They're awarded. What do you think of these two names?
No, I mean, I think this is probably the best, you know, early roster of directors we've had for, you know, a series so far. You know, I'm very excited to see what they bring to the table, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's, you know, maybe some people from The Mandalorian that jump over, maybe direct an episode as well. Presumably John Watts is probably going to direct one since he's the executive producer of the series. But yeah, you know, this is it's very cool. The more I hear about Skeleton Crew, at least when it comes to who's working on it, the more interested I'm getting.
Do we know how many episodes Skeleton Crew is going to be?
I don't think so.
Yeah, they usually don't announce that kind of thing.
Yeah, I imagine it'll probably be similar to Mandalorian and stuff, probably like around 8 episodes or so.
So say it's 8 episodes. We have one directed by the Daniels. We have one directed by David Lowery. We probably have at least one directed by John Watts.
Mm-hmm.
If I was John Watts, I'd direct the pilot and the finale. or yeah. the other season finale. So that leaves us with four or five more people. Mm-hmm. Do you think, I know you said it's going to be, you think it's going to be people from Mandalorian, but do you think there's another high hitter like these names that will come out of nowhere and surprise us?
Yeah, I certainly think it's possible. I mean, it's, you know, if they've got these people so far, then like I can't help but imagine that they've got, you know, some other talented people that they haven't, you know, released yet.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this, do you think this is going to be some of the stuff that they were going to announce next week at Star Wars Celebration?
Yeah, I mean, considering the next show on the lineup is Ahsoka and then Skeleton Crew after that, I feel like they're going to have to do something to like to tease Skeleton Crew, because that's too close on the docket for them not to do something about it.
Yeah, I think we've only seen an image that they showed us at D23 of Jude Law. And
well, yeah, and then they show, and then there was a piece of concept art too, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm excited for this. I really don't know what this is going to be. Am I incorrect in saying that this has been kind of pitched as like a Stranger Things in the Star Wars universe?
I think that's the idea, at least, you know, because of the simple premise of it focusing on a group of kids. But yeah, I think that's what they're going for, is giving us a Star Wars version of Stranger Things.
Yeah. I mean, we really haven't seen, like, aside from like animation, like a movie following kids in the Star Wars universe. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Could be cool.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited. One other thing I think you would be excited about, I mean, we're both excited for. Were you a fan of the movie Scott Pilgrim, Brad?
I am a big fan of the movie Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
That's called a leading question. Because I know the answer. They're going to be making a Scott Pilgrim anime series, and it's going to bring back almost the entire cast of Edgar Wright's live action movie, and it's being produced by Ben David Krupinski and Brian Lee O'Malley, who created the comic book series. And it's good. I mean, I would list off the names, but it's literally the whole list of the people that, you know, were involved in the live action film. What do you make of this, Brad? Is this something like, I don't know, Scott Pilgrim is such a perfect movie. Mm-hmm. But I do love the books, and I think the books are better than the movie. There's so much in there, and they can expand upon it. And I'm excited to see it in expanded into an anime. But like, I don't know. On one side, I'm like, I'm excited to see it expanded in anime. On the other side, is like, you know, can it really be better than the movie?
No, I don't think. There's a chance it could be better than the movie. I don't think it will be, just because. For me personally, I'm not a huge anime fan. I know that the original comics themselves, graphic novels, whatever you want to call them, definitely take inspiration from anime in their artistic style and presentation. And you know, Scott Pilgrim versus the World does a really good job of bringing that style into live action in a very cool way. And for whatever reason, even though I don't like the anime animation style, I like when they bring certain flourishes that are in anime into live action. And so I think that Scott Pilgrim lends itself very well to anime, and considering they have the entire voice cast back and Edgar Wright is very much involved, I think this is something that could be very cool, and I will definitely check it out to see how it turns out.
For sure. Okay. The main thing I wanted to bring you onto the podcast, Brad, is to talk about your visit to Pixar Animation Studios last week. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save big.
Okay, we're back. Brad, you got to visit, you got to go up to the Bay Area in San Francisco to visit Pixar Animation Studios. You've been there before, but I think it's the first time anybody's been there since the pandemic.
Yeah, actually, funnily enough, the last time I was there was for Onward, which was the last movie Pixar had released in theaters before the pandemic.
So how, like, just in terms of the studios, does anything seem different?
The only thing that seems different is there are some people that are wearing masks. Otherwise, this was like felt like every other press day that I've had at Pixar. There's just people, who are choosing to wear masks when they're in the more public spaces. Because where we spend most of our time is in like the main lobby of the Steve Jobs building on campus, and then in one of their screening rooms. And I saw people like when they were coming to an area that was like the cafe area, basically where there's a lot of people there for lunch. That was when they were wearing masks, or if they were walking around the hallways.
Yeah. And you were there for their new feature film Elemental, but we learned about a short that's going to play before that, which is a sequel to one of Pixar's best movies.
Yeah. So in case you haven't heard, there's a series of shorts on Disney Plus called Doug Days that focuses on Doug, the talking dog from Up. They're just like little animated shorts that you can watch there. And after that, those happened. Bob Peterson and Kim Collins, who worked on Up together, and Doug Days, they had an idea for another short, and this one kind of acts as an epilogue to Up in a way, because it brings Ed Asner back as Carl. It's one of his final performances. It might actually end up being his final performance. I'm not sure how much more he had in the works that was still had to come down the pipeline yet, but they got him for a little bit and brought him back as Carl. And the premise of it is that Charles Muntz's dogs have been adopted by a local senior center, and one of the women there is interested in Carl and wants to go out on a date with her dog Beta and Carl. And so the short is basically Carl trying to like psych himself up to go out on this date, and Doug trying to help him the best that he can.
I'm not sure if I'm ready for Carl to move on, Brad.
Well, I will tell you, without obviously giving anything away, that there is definitely an emotional core to this one that will this one just might bring some tears to your face, and it serves as a nice little cap on Up.
Well, that's good to know that they were actually able to do this before his passing.
Yeah, and it was something too that Bob Peterson, he was there, and like he talked to us a little bit afterwards. He said that it kind of came out of watching his grandparents kind of have to deal with this after one of them had passed, and then having to like, you know, live on and still, you know, live your normal life afterwards.
I'm almost surprised that they did this as a short and not as a feature, because it feels like so many people love Up that they could have expanded, or, you know, not that story is like the whole, that could have been a subplot in a feature.
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to bet that they probably didn't have like anything like a larger story to tell that they could, you know, fit that into. And plus, it probably is good that they didn't, because since we did end up losing Ed Asner, it probably wouldn't have worked out.
Okay, you were there to see some footage for their new film Elemental. This is the next film from Pete Sohn, who has worked for Pixar for some time. He was the credited director for The Good Dinosaur, but he kind of came on that project pretty late. I think
after there were some creative differences.
Yeah. So, but this is his baby.
Yes. Yeah. This is 100% fully his movie.
So tell us about Pixar's Elemental.
So Pixar's Elemental takes place in a world where its inhabitants are comprised of either water, air, earth, or fire. And the story takes place in this place called Element City, which is like an elemental version of New York City. And the main character is Ember, who is a woman who is made of fire. And she comes from an immigrant family who came to Element City to try and find, to create a better life for themselves. And so they move into this burrow, and they kind of build up this little area after moving into an abandoned brownstone essentially. And what sprouts up around them is this like little community of other fire people in a place called Firetown. And Ember and her family, her father and mother, run this little convenience store called The Fireplace, where they sell a whole bunch of stuff. And it's on the outskirts of the bustling metropolis that is Element City. And the story basically is it's Pixar going into pretty much full-fledged romantic comedy territory. And it finds Ember meeting Wade, who is a guy made of water. And he accidentally ends up in her convenience store after a little mishap with her anger results in a burst pipe that floods the basement with water. And Wade somehow gets like rushed in there. And then he realizes that there's a bunch of code violations that need to be taken, and he's not like happy about it. Like, he's actually really distressed and crying about it because he doesn't want to ruin her life or their family, everything. And so basically Ember's trying to like stop this from happening, but Ember and Wade, despite being elementally literally opposed to each other and diametrically opposed, have this like nice little meet cute, and they it seems like that they're maybe striking up a little bit of a romance. And that could be trouble for Ember, because one of Ember's grandmother's dying wishes was that she should marry somebody who is part of the fire people.
Well, you can see some allegories here, some metaphors, obviously. How much footage did you end up seeing?
In total, we saw roughly a half an hour. They showed us like the opening of the movie, and then they showed us about three or four other scenes from the rest of the movie.
And you mentioned that this is kind of like a romantic comedy. Has Pixar ever done a romantic comedy before?
The closest that they came would have been Up. Or, sorry, not, well, the beginning of Up, well. but then Wall-E is the one that is Wall-E, a, yeah. Yeah. That's there's definitely a romantic comedy there, but they never really got to do any of like the full romantic comedy tropes, because it's Wall-E and Eve, and they don't talk. You know, they only say Wall-E and Eve.
Yeah, and then the only other thing I can think of is like that short blue umbrella. Was that the name of it? It was with the blue umbrella. I think that was Pixar, right?
I don't remember that one.
But again, it was just an umbrella. So it's like a blue umbrella. I'm looking this up. Pixar. Yes, it was The Blue Umbrella. Is 2013, and it was
man, I'm blanking on that one.
Yeah. No, it was about two umbrellas that kind of fall in love. It's like inanimate objects. It's not really people. I mean, not that elemental is people, but it's people with words and more range.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to make of this, to be honest with you, Brad. It looks cool, but like I also don't understand how there can be a happy ending here, because one character is fire and one character is water, and it feels like there's no possible way scientifically that they can get together.
I mean, that's kind of the idea, really. And that was something that really like drove Pete Soane's kind of like story, was that, you know, can fire and water ever truly connect? And so that's the whole, you know, driving force. And so like adding the thematic layers that obviously deal with, you know, race and these kinds of things really, really fits into that. And I think my favorite part of it is that approach, because one of the cool things that they're doing with Elemental is that even though there are clearly, you know, there's clearly a metaphor and thematic elements involving the idea of race and like, you know, people from different backgrounds connecting, whether they actually can, and having this, you know, generational pressure and whatnot. They haven't made it so that the elements are like directly tied to like a particular race or ethnic background. So even though Pete Soane is Korean and his family were Korean immigrants and everything, the fire people aren't necessarily intended to be Korean. In fact, what they did is they've actually utilized a bunch of different traits from a variety of cultures to like define the various elements and things like that. So like they have a fire language that was created by Doug Peterson, who created languages for Game of Thrones, and it sounds a little bit Slavic. But then there are other elements that like you can see clearly come from like Polish and Jewish and Middle Eastern influences. There's like one, there's a shirt that they sell in the store that says "Kiss me, I'm fire-ish." So obviously that comes from, you know, from Irish people. So there's a lot of cool stuff like that they've done to like really meld a variety of different cultures. And they tried to build the culture around the elements themselves, you know? So like the fire people, like spicy food, and, they eat, their snacks are like, a lot of them are made up of wood and things like that. And so then they did the same thing, you know, for the water people and the air people and earth people and whatnot. And so it's really cool to see how they did that. And if there's one thing, like it initially seems like the water people could be representative of like white people since they're the majority, like, but that's because, water was the first element to like evolve into like life. And then after that came earth and air and fire was the last one. And so that's why Element City is kind of catered to water people. But I think that the way they get around that too is like Mumadou Achi is the guy who voices Wade, and he's a black actor, so you know that's obviously goes against the idea of like water strictly representing you know white people in Elemental. So
okay, so you not only saw footage, but I'm assuming you went through like the labyrinth of like workshops around Pixar showing you different elements of of the production process.
Yeah.
Anything cool that you learned in that whole?
Yeah, the technical stuff behind this movie was really fascinating and impressive, because it seems like this might be one of their most technically challenging movies, because of the mere fact that their main characters are made of fire and water. And that posed a lot of challenges, because normally stuff like fire and water is stuff that is reserved for the effects department. And this meant that they kind of had to change their workflow a little bit, because the effects department had to be involved with the character design process, and they constantly had to be working, going back and forth and, you know, fixing things and, you know, repurposing them, because one of the like driving forces behind the character design was that Ember isn't somebody who is on fire. She is made of fire. And Wade isn't, you know, covered in water. He is water. So that changes like the character rigs and how they move. So like if you pay attention to Ember when she's moving in certain times, like if she moves quickly, parts of her body like blow away in the wind essentially, and like her flame gets more intense, you know, or less intense as she gets angry or gets sad. And similarly, Wade, you know, because his body is made of liquid, sometimes the way he moves, like there are cool little like physical comedic elements they were able to add of like how his face moves on his head. And like there's one shot they pointed out to us where Ember kind of like is mad and like makes a, like a lunge at him, and like he moves quickly to get out of the way, and like his for a split second his head detaches from his body as he moves out of the way. And then like with Wade too, initially they anticipated that Ember was going to be the more difficult character because she's made of fire, but water is still very difficult to animate even with the advanced technology we have today. And they found Wade to be supremely more difficult to animate, because one of the things that they had to consider was the mix of making it look realistically like water but stylizing it so that it didn't look like actual water, because if they made it look like actual water, Wade would be clear, and when they tried that, he looked like glass. He didn't look like water. So they had to add, you know, a blue tint to it. But then water is also transparent. But Wade has a face that has eyes and teeth. So if they made him fully, you know, transparent the normal way, then it would be really creepy, because you would see his entire eyeballs and his entire mouth. And like if you would see him from the back, you would see the back of his eyes and the back of his teeth and everything. So they had to figure out a way to make him look transparent, but so that the things like that are inside of his face weren't visible when they were animating him. So there was a lot of cool stuff like that. And there's little touches too that like you probably won't even notice until, you know, a second viewing if you're really paying attention. Like Ember's eyes, her pupils, because she's made of fire, they are not always stable. They're kind of like waving a little bit as if they are also made of fire. So there's they did a lot of really impressive things with figuring out the character designs and whatnot. And they now have the most computers that they have ever used on a Pixar movie before. It's over 150,000 computers that they have working in their facility now to render all the stuff for Elemental. And that is exponentially more than the most that they have had to use previously, which was for Finding Nemo, I think.
Wow. And that's all in the facility there In,
yeah, they have their own like basically like server room.
Yeah, the render farm.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if like nowadays like you can outsource that overseas somehow. Like, well, I guess it would be too hard to like send all that data. The data to send the data would probably cost a lot of money. Never mind to render it. So, yeah. Anything else? Or actually, let's bottom line it here. Because what did you make out of it? Like, what were your expectations going in? And like, did it surpass your expectations? Like, what are your thoughts on what you saw?
So for me, this was a movie that I was not necessarily super excited about. I wasn't down on it or anything like that. But it felt kind of like a fairly basic premise, and mostly because it feels like a simple idea. You know, you're doing kind of like a West Side Story kind of romance. You know, where two people who really probably can't and maybe shouldn't be together seem to be sparking up a relationship, and you have, you know, the racial dynamics, and it's in a city, and it's a story that you've seen countless times before, from as far back as, you know, Romeo and Juliet to, you know, almost every single, you know, romantic comedy out there. But for me, I was keenly interested in the world that they built after seeing so much more of it. This is like classic Pixar world building kind of movie magic. The ingenuity and the creativity that has gone into creating Element City and designing the characters and just the way that they all the elements kind of like interact and like live in this world. To me, that's made this, you know, feel like it's still fresh, even though it's a very familiar story. So I think that I'm actually more interested in seeing how it turns out. Because I'm wondering, you know, how they're going to get to that point where, like, how can Wade and Ember be together when they are fire and water? I think that's a very intriguing thing. And, you know, and I like the immigrant tale approach to it, too. You know, it's something that's very personal for Pete Stone as a filmmaker. And there's a lot of people at Pixar who are in his same position, whose parents, you know, came to the United States looking for a better life. And so there's a real personal element here as well. Pete Stone even said that actually his grandmother, one of the things that she said on her deathbed was that she wanted him to marry a Korean person. And so like that is in Elemental and is very much directly inspired by his own life. And Pete Stone did not marry a Korean woman. So there's a lot of personal stakes in this for him. And you can really just, there's passion, you know, and there's a genuine love for like how these characters were created and the story that's being told. And so I'm very interested to see how it turns out.
I'm pulling for this because I know Pixar has kind of been dealt some losses, especially in the streaming era of being direct to Disney Plus. And obviously, you know, their first one that was theatrical was Lightyear, and that didn't do that well. And this one, I feel like a lot of people are writing it off. Like you said, it does look like a story we've seen many times before. Some people, you know, I was talking to some people in the theme park the other day, and they're like, oh, it's like Zootopia with Elements. I'm like, how is that? I guess because it's like Elemental City. And
yeah, there is definitely a little bit of a feel like that, but it's the story that makes it different.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if they're going to be able to market that and if that's going to be able to come out, because if they're going to be able to convince people to come out to the theaters to see it, because I really love Pixar's originals, and it feels like if this doesn't do well, I feel like we're going to get a lot more sequels from Pixar. I mean, we already have sequels announced, more Toy Stories and stuff. So I don't know. I'm pulling for this is what I'm saying. So.
Yeah, same here.
If you want to read Brad's coverage of this on the site, I'll link it in the show notes. If you want to subscribe to this podcast, you can do so on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please send us your feedback, questions, comments, concerns to us at peter.com. And please rate and read this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, spread the word. We'll see you tomorrow. Or actually, today's Friday, so we'll see you on Monday.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.